Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 15th, 2024. It has been 3,731 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 55 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 52 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened over the weekend. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south, and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Ukraine's supply of air defense munitions is in a catastrophic state, preventing the proper defense of its airspace. 2. While Iran's large-scale attack on Israel has altered the political climate in the United States, House Speaker Mike Johnson continues to signal he will not advance any aid package for Ukraine to a vote, and we maintain that military aid to Ukraine has ended unless there is a change in political leadership. 3. Without the restoration of air defense, Ukrainian troops will be forced to continue to withdraw from areas the Russian aerospace forces target for intense bombardment. 4. Based on multiple reports that the United States has set multiple restrictions on what military equipment can be provided and how it can be used due to a misguided fear of a Russian tactical nuclear strike, the world is caught in the mutually assured destruction instability paradox. 5. Russian forces have completed setting conditions to attack Chasiv Yar, with the Russian Ministry of Defense requiring its capture by May the 9th. 6. Russia is also setting conditions in two additional operational areas for future wider attacks, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. 7. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 8. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 9. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 10. The drone strikes on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant were Russian false flag operations to deter continued Western assistance, as Ukraine drives no military or geopolitical benefits from the attacks, but Russia does. This is the last day for this entry. We start today's report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts. Just over the Kharkiv oblast border in Balki, Belgorod, Russia, an R-340 RP Pol-21 electronic warfare complex was destroyed by a Ukrainian drone. The Pol-21 is a GPS and GLONASS jamming system designed to disrupt the navigation system of drones and cruise missiles. The VKS, that's the Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed the village of Vesela, northeast of Kharkiv, destroying a private home. The residents, a married couple, were killed in the attack. In the Siversk area of operation, also known as NAO, of Luhansk Oblast, Ukrainian forces have pushed Russian troops back from the base of the chalk mine Tarakan, southeast of Bilohorivka, making a small but tactically significant gain. Russian forces continued their attacks from southwest of Zolotarivka, attempting to advance in the direction of Verkhnyokamenskoye at the Luhansk-Donetsk Oblast's administrative border. On Saturday, the Ukrainian Air Forces used French-provided Scalp E air-to-surface cruise missiles to strike two buildings of the Luhansk machine building plant in the occupied city of Luhansk. The same area was attacked in May 2023 and was moderately damaged. In the most recent attacks, one of the buildings was completely destroyed. We link to multiple videos that show the attack and the aftermath. You can learn more in the podcast description about becoming a subscriber to access our nearly daily situation reports. Moving to the Donbas, in northeastern Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continued probing attacks north of Soledar. The Russian Ministry of Defense, or Armed, claimed that fighting was ongoing near Vesela. There has been no change in the situation. Russian forces have completed setting conditions for their main attack in the Kostyantynivka AO, advancing towards Chasiv Yar in three directions. Ukrainian forces had to withdraw from Bohdanivka after defensive lines were breached from the southeast, and uncooperative weather improved soil conditions. Russian forces have advanced to the eastern edge of Kalinivka. Pay attention, Google Maps provides the wrong translation and marks the settlement as Kalinina. The Ministry of Defense of Ukraine has opened an investigation into the leadership of the 67th Mechanized Brigade after the loss of critical positions. The unit members of the Right Sector Ukrainian Volunteer Corps are being transferred to other military units, reportedly due to the inability of leadership to adapt from a volunteer brigade to a true military unit. The loss of control of the ridge west of Bohdanivka has complicated the defense of Chasiv Yar, with Russian forces poised to have an easier route of advance from the north. This follows the same tactics used in Bakhmut and Avdiivka of squeezing the flanks and forcing Ukrainian troops to withdraw. Colonel General Oleksandr Sirsky said that the Kremlin had ordered Russian forces to capture the strategically critical settlement by May the 9th, and that Ukraine would have to use asymmetrical warfare tactics to hold its defense. In our assessment, without an immediate increase in short-range air defense and artillery ammunition, Ukrainian forces will continue to be forced to withdraw to the Siversky-Donetsk-Donbas canal, which Russian forces can cross where it goes underground, south of Kalinivka and east of Novy district, where Russian forces continue to advance. Local commanders report that Russian troops are, quote, constantly conducting combat reconnaissance in the direction of Chasiv Yar, and preparations are underway for the main assault. Further south, positional fighting continued northwest of Klishivka, with the Russian armored platoon briefly breaching Ukrainian lines before being eliminated. Ukrainian forces continued to interdict Russian troops and supplies trying to advance to the line of conflict from Kodema and Odradivka. In the Turetsk-Nyorkaya, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, also known as GSAFU, reported a Russian attack in the direction of New York was repulsed, without specifying the direction. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continued to push Ukrainian troops back in the Avdiivka-AO, making tactically significant gains in several directions. Russian forces continue to be held south and southeast of Novokolonovo, but the situation is becoming increasingly difficult for Ukraine. Russian forces have advanced along the railroad line to the garden plots east of Novobakhmutivka and southeast of Ocheretene, supported by the VKS. Russian forces have also advanced southeast of Novobakhmutivka, almost reaching the road that goes to Berdychi, where fighting continued. Russian mercenary Milblogo Wogonzo claimed that Russian forces were pushed out of southeastern Semenivka and that positional fighting was ongoing west of Orlivka. Russian forces continued their attempts to advance on Umanske while successfully advancing west of Vodyane in the direction of Yasnobrodivka and Netailove. While the line of conflict was moved west, the gray area extends east to Tonenke, as it remains unclear if Russian forces are occupying the beet fields and tree lines or repeatedly advancing through the same terrain. East of Netailove, Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting continued in Pervomayske. GSCFU reported the heaviest fighting in Ukraine continued in the Vuhledar Raion. Heavy fighting continued on the southeastern edge of Krasnohorivka, with Russian troops hit by ground-launched small-diameter bombs launched by HIMARS. Ukrainian defenders reported that the Krasnohorivka refractory plant was repeatedly bombed by the VKS with Fab 1500 bombs, destroying the most defensible point in the settlement. Russian forces made advances between Pobeda and Novomikhailivka and now have physical control of the road from southern Marinka. The map was adjusted. Another geolocated video showed that Ukrainian forces continued to hold defensive lines on the southern edge of Novomikhailivka and made a small advance. Russian forces continued their subordinate attacks in the Staromlinivka AO. Russian sources reported continued fighting in the area of Urozhayne, while Russian and Ukrainian sources reported ongoing fighting west of Staromayorske. There were no significant changes to the situation. In Zaporizhia Oblast, assaults continued in the Orikhive AO, but the fighting intensity remained low. Russian forces continue to report that there is no shortage of Ukrainian artillery or drones, making it extremely difficult to advance into and hold territory in Robotyne. In occupied Tokmak, a Russian base was hit by rockets fired by HIMARS, destroying an ammunition depot. Russian officials reported that 16 were killed and 20 wounded. The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, provided an update on the status of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, ZNPP. Director General Rafael Grossi reported that Reactor 4 had been brought to cold shutdown. All six reactors are now in a cold state and theoretically could go as long as 3 weeks without coolant circulation. IAEA monitors reported that on Saturday they heard, quote, 16 rounds of outgoing artillery fire in less than half an hour, some at near distance, others further away, but still clearly audible. Grossi called the situation, quote, very precarious. The General Staff accused Russia of preparing another provocation at ZNPP and directly accused Moscow of conducting last week's drone attacks on the plant. Quote, Ukraine has always taken a responsible approach to the safety of nuclear facilities. Only the return of the ZNPP to the control of Ukraine can restore the real safety of the plant. As long as Russian terrorists are at the nuclear power plant, keep their military equipment there, and have the opportunity to conduct their operations, the station's safety cannot be guaranteed. Unquote. Here is my theater-wide update. On April the 13th and the 14th, Ukrainian air defenses shut down 10 of 10 Shahed 136 one-way drones and 2 Kh-59 guided missiles. There was a sharp reduction in Russian missile and drone strikes since the large-scale attack on Thursday. President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky could sign the mobilization bill passed by the Verkhovna Rada as early as tomorrow. Men of conscription age who were given medical waivers are expected to start re-examination in mid-May. The Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, made the strongest statement yet about a lack of military aid from Ukraine and the US requests not to strike at Russian refineries. Quote, I listened to Mr. Austin. He is a great friend of Ukraine, and he has done a lot for us. But in this matter, honestly, I do not see a cause-and-effect relationship. When an oil refinery explodes in Russia, we see the emergence of problems in the Russian energy market. But I don't see any problems in the world. And if there are no batteries, there is no aid package, and at the same time you're asked not to do something, then what is there to talk about? Everyone is surviving as best they can. Unquote. In another diplomatic surprise, Slovakia and Ukraine signed an agreement to establish cooperation in the development of small modular nuclear reactors and the diversification of fuel sources. After an initial hardline pro-Kremlin stance by Prime Minister Robert Fico when he took office in October 2023, the relationship between Kyiv and Bratislava has been steadily thawing. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz announced that his nation was sending a third full Patriot battery, radar, command center, generator, and 6 to 8 launches, adding that, quote, "We stand steadfast on the side of Ukraine." Foreign Minister Kuleba announced that active negotiations were underway for 2 additional Patriot batteries and another SAMPT air defense system, both capable of intercepting short-range ballistic missiles and Russia's so-called hypersonic weapons. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Mike Turner, expressed optimism that a military aid package for Israel, Taiwan, and Ukraine would be passed this week, with a, quote, "overwhelming majority of votes." Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has only signaled that he would advance a standalone package for Israel after Iran and its proxies launched over 330 missiles and drones on Sunday. Johnson is under immense pressure from all sides to either do nothing or to bring the Senate supplemental aid bill passed in February to the floor. At least 2 Christian nationalist Republicans, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, posted vile messages on Twitter, also known as X, that repeated the worst of Russian propaganda. Greene repeatedly threatened to move forward with her discharge petition if a bill that includes military aid to Ukraine is brought to the floor. One more congressperson signed discharge petition 9 on Friday. Another 23 signatures are required to force a floor vote, and after the Iranian attack, it is widely expected that it will receive more signatures. Even if the bill gets the required 218 to force a vote, Johnson could waive House rules, forcing the requirement of a 2/3 supermajority to pass the measure. If all seated members of the House participate, that would require 289 votes in favor instead of 217. It's time to talk about the land of Mobik's mobilization and Mir. Former United States citizen from Texas turned Russian propagandist Russell Bentley was reportedly found dead near occupied Horlivka after going missing on April 7. Bentley was a convicted drug smuggler who spent 5 years in a U.S. prison and a self-declared communist. He moved to occupied Donetsk in 2014 and claims he fought as Spetsnaz in the Vostok Battalion through 2017. The 64-year-old Bentley faded from view after 2022 and was reportedly found with 6 to 8 gunshot wounds to the head. The car of Ukrainian traitor Vasily Prozorov, who fled to Moscow after Russia invaded the Donbas and Crimea, exploded when he entered it. Prozorov reportedly survived the assassination attempt, but suffered severe injuries to his legs. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.